Behind Our Eyes presents the Bow Book Launch for March 21, 2024, Thursday. Welcome, everyone. I'm your co-host, Marlene Massot. Tonight's featured author is Anne Chipeta with her recently released book, young adult novel, Imperfections. And she will be interviewed by fellow author Deanna Quietwater Noriega. Over to you, Deanna.
All right. Welcome, Annie. We share being in the same writers group, of course. Writers Party Line is our chief connection of, but we've known each other for quite a while. Tell me a little bit about this book. Why didn't you read the jacket information for us?
Okay, well, it's great to be here, and I hope you enjoy this reading and get to know the book a little bit more through the synopsis here. For Lainey, feeling unwelcome is only the beginning of her struggles. Her mom is addicted to painkillers, her stepfather is a felon, and her dad traded her in for a new family. So what if she's kicked out of high school? Determined and attractive, Lainey sets out to make her own path. Shane, the young man she begins dating and believes is trustworthy, transforms into a possessive and cruel boyfriend. When Efren, Shane's older cousin, enters her life, Lainey grasps onto a shred of hope, falling in love. Shane's obsessive and abusive treatment of her, however, casts a deep shadow over Efren and Lainey's chance to find safety and a future free of the fear of Shane's sadistic retribution. Will their love persevere, or will Shane's pervasive and negative influence push Lainey and Efren apart, forcing them to love secretly? Well, there you go.
Okay. When did you begin writing?
I think I began writing when I learned how to read. I was very young. I was an early reader. I think I was around 4 when I was reading. I was reading like a lot of books for first and second graders when I was still like in kindergarten. So, and I started writing these like little, I don't know, little story things. Like mostly pictures, and then I would have a story around the picture kind of thing. And anybody who listened, I would tell them about it. So that's how I started.
Okay, so when was your first book published?
My first book was published in 2016, and that was a book of poems called Upwelling. And it's only 23 poems. But that was like my test. Put my toe in the water and see if I could do this. Because before that, I was having a lot of difficulty finding people to help me. I was having access barriers with computer software. And back in 2016, we all know how Amazon was not quite accessible. There was a lot of, there was still some things like in Microsoft Word and stuff back then that I just wasn't well versed in using, and it was really hard for me to even think that I could even overcome the barriers to print a book by myself. And I just kept turning over. At every turn, I got turned back. I got turned back. I got turned back. And I got really discouraged for a while, and then I read Patty Fletcher's first book, and at the end of her book was a call to action and an actual phone number and email address to DLD Books. And I called them up and they said, "We can help you, no problem. What do you want to do?" And that was the beginning of my publishing career as an independent author.
Did you have anything published before that in a magazine or
Yeah, I had lots of like poems that were in like those little small press reviews, you know, the kind where you print out things on an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper, and then you fold it in half and staple it, and that's a book. They were all handmade, homemade, but I found a little success there. I found other poets who had these little reviews, if even some that were, a little bit more prestigious than that, were liking my stuff. And so I just kept writing. I figured poetry was probably more accessible to me in terms of a writer, because I didn't have to worry about a whole short story, or I mean, it was intimidating to write more than a page or two. I had trouble completing like a short story and stuff, whereas a poem, I could complete a poem, I could feel successful. So it was, let's see, I would say, let's see, I know I'm around 1998, 1999, I started, having my poems put in these little reviews and stuff. And probably for about 5 or 6 years, I did that. And then I started college, and that it kind of got put on the wayside when I started school. So,
Yeah,
yeah,
you can do
a lot of
that.
stuff.
That's a major undertaking with anyone with visual impairment. Well, with
Yeah.
the having to use technology and the transportation and all the other parts of,
Childcare. Yeah.
yes, all
Yeah.
of the other pieces of trying to coordinate your life.
Yes. My goodness.
One of the things you did, okay, so which was your next book?
So first it was Upwelling, and then it was Follow Your Dog, and that was in 2017. And that's my memoir about blindness and partnering with my guide dogs. And that was actually a culmination of blog posts and short essays that I had been putting out since I started my blog. And I just put them together and organized them and added a little bit here and there, and added some of my longer essays, and I made a book. That was probably about the easiest book, because it was all pre-existing except for like maybe the editing or adding a couple of things. And I'm very proud of that book. I think that that
I
was
think
my,
that was the one we connected on because, of course,
yeah.
I'm a 50 plus year dog handler, and what struck me was the struggle you had because you had some usable vision with people thinking that it was more useful than it was, and you feeling guilty like you were taking a dog from somebody that needed it more than you did. But in honesty, when you have narrow visual acuity or an inability to adjust from changes from light to dark quickly,
Yeah.
you're really at high risk when you're trying to depend on unreliable vision, aren't you?
Yes. Yeah, I think it's, I remember, I always had a lot of what they call accommodation issues, going from light to dark, like you said. And one time I was with my first dog, and we were going from outside into this mall, and so from light to dark. And Verona found the door for me, and we went inside, and I stumbled, and I crashed into the wet floor sign. I just lost my balance. And and then the instructor came up to me, and he put his hand on my shoulder. He said, "Do you have trouble? Do you have trouble going from light to dark?" And I said, "Yes." And I was like 2 steps from crying, because I thought I was like the worst dog handler in the world. And he goes, "Just, it's okay. You don't have to, just take your time, and people will go around you. Don't feel like you have to, like, get ready to go before you feel ready to take that step." He says, "Don't put that pressure on yourself." So when he said that, I was like, "Wow, somebody understood. I never like said anything to anybody, and he saw what was happening, and he like validated that." And that was like, wow. That was a really powerful moment for me with my first dog. So.
Well, that was one of the things that impressed me because I don't think we had actually conversed before I read that book, and I was so impressed with your struggles and your confusion, and I thought, oh, I just wish, I'd been there when she was younger to reassure her that vision loss isn't, you don't have to be a total to need accommodations. You don't have to
Right.
be any, there's no one right way to be blind. Everybody
Yeah.
makes it up as you go along.
Well, I wish you were there when I was a kid, because I had no one else knew how to tell me about those things when I was a kid,
And I think we would have been friends because we were both a little bit of the tomboy and the adventurer as
Yes.
children. So we could have gotten into a lot of trouble together. So anyway, the next one that I was interested in
Okay.
was your words of life because it's a lot of how I write in that poetry, essays, and personal musings all get scrambled together when I'm working on something. And that one is kind of like that, isn't it? It's
Yes.
a real mixture.
Yes, it is. That came out in 2019, and so I had a lot of poems left over from Upwelling, and but they weren't. There weren't enough poems, I thought, to really to make a larger collection. And then somebody has suggested, well, you have all these nonfiction ex essays, that that you have, that you've I had a couple of them published and stuff. And I said, oh, I can do that. I guess I can. So that's what I did. And I think that's my the book that I got to actually also narrate. And so I read a lot of the poetry along with Leanne Rowe and Graydon Slichter. They helped me narrate it and put it up on Audible. And so I get credit as a narrator as well as the author for that book. So that was really
So
cool.
Annie hits the stage.
Yeah.
And then,
Yeah.
of course, you got involved with Friends in Arts and did a lot of emceeing and presenting your own material to ACB conventions and things, didn't you?
Yes. Yeah. That was I think I recognized that I always liked to be on stage and I always liked to perform. It's nerve-wracking, but it's also very gratifying and exciting. So, yeah, so that I kind of discovered that. Not too late to
And
discover things about yourself.
no, and you also started working with our group, I know, about how to give presentations when you can't read Braille or large print or whatever. Is there anything you can do besides memorizing short pieces? Because presentation is part of being an author if you're going to market your work, isn't it?
Yes, and I think it's it's a pressure that I think we all feel as authors or poets. Like, people, I mean, the whole reason why people write poetry is to share it and to have that. I mean, some people don't ever share their poetry, but most people do. Most people want to, at least, make that connection. And poetry is meant to be read aloud. So I found a way through trial and error to listen and recite what I hear. I call it audio prompting, and it's helped me a lot. Feel better about getting up in public and reading, at least reading short pieces. It's difficult to read long pieces, but something that's like poetry or a short piece of prose is doable. I also used it for, my presentations on when I was working at the VA, and I was asked to present on subject matters, very dry counseling stuff, or presenting on PTSD and families and things like that. It really helped.
The book blurb that I really liked best of all of your stuff. They're all excellent. It's a great deal of verve in the way you present your material for marketing purposes. So my favorite one is A String of Stories from the Heart to the Future. And I'll read that one because I think it's really one of your better ones. A demon deer and a ghost cat, sibling rivalry and sexual awakening, self-image and self-confidence, a chance for children. Whoops, I think I skipped a line there. A chance for an off-worlder to breathe free at last on a new planet. Those are just some of the diverse themes of these remarkable stories. Some endings are happy, some are sad, and some are intriguingly open-ended. But once you step inside the author's world, you cannot emerge unmoved. That's a lovely, very, very, intriguing book jacket, I would say.
Well, thank you. Thank you
So
very
you've
much.
done a
Yeah.
lot of different things that other indie authors haven't done, as far as ways you've tried to spread your material around. And one of them is to make as much of it as possible available to other visually impaired people, which means having some way to get it into the National Library Service. You've done a lot of podcasts. You've done all kinds of things to try to let people know what you write and where they can get it. And how did you get four of your six books into the NLS system so that your other friends could read stuff that they would not have an easy access to? I know that techie people can use Kindle. You can even get your dot devices to read it for you if you buy an e version.
Right.
But a lot of those require a little bit of tech savvy to know how to do that. And you wanted to make it available through the ways that they are used to getting them.
Yeah.
So I thought how you did that was really interesting.
Well, it wasn't simple. And it's gotten easier over time, I think. Let's see, when I wanted to put Follow Your Dog up on I wanted it to be recorded through the NLS, and I was very frustrated with the process at the time. This was, back in 2017, 2018, and I lived in New York at the time, and it was my understanding that if you were I was an NLS patron, so I was a receiver of the talking books, digital talking books and talking books. So I went to the Andrew High School Library and tried to find out who I needed to approach so I could put my book on the list to be considered to be recorded. And I never got anywhere with them. So I said, All right. So at the time, I was still on the I was in the one of the officers for the American Council of the Blind of New York. So I was on the leadership list, the ACB leadership list. I was, allowed to be there because I was one of the officers. So I put a call out. I said, "Does anybody know how I can contact somebody? What do I need to do to get my book up on audio? I'm not having any success." And Kim Charleston herself helped me. So I think that was like my first break, was having Kim help me, and my book got recorded in Massachusetts, not New York.
Yeah.
So the Perkins Library did it for me. So I have been with Perkins ever since because they have been accommodating. They have helped with me with all my books. So Follow Your Dog was done the traditional way. It I hadn't had it up on Audible yet, and I went to have it recorded for audiobooks first, and they did that, and then I took the digital files that the NLS gave me, and I converted them with help to how the Audible wanted them done, and I did it that way. And but I couldn't. But I made less money because it wasn't what they call an exclusive contract with Audible, because I had already had them recorded somewhere else. So that would be a non-exclusive contract with Audible, and it would make me less money. So I said, I'm not going to make that mistake next time.
Yeah, it's a learning process,
Yeah,
isn't
it
it?
is. And so the after Words of Life, so I did Follow Your Dog first, and then I went back. And I found a way to my first Audible audiobook was Upwelling, because I found Leanne Rowe and Graydon Schlichter, and they helped me record it, and they also did the technical upload and all that stuff for me. So and then I took the Upwelling files and I went back to Perkins. I said, can you help me? Here are my digital files. I'd like to submit my book for you. And it worked better that way. It was less cumbersome and less time waited to record my book for Audible and then send a request to NLS. And so they only had to deal with the digital files and preparing the digital files. So I didn't actually have to wait for a narrator, for them to choose or, whatever. So that's how I do it. I get my book recorded first and have it loaded into Audible, and then I contact Perkins and ask them, how long is the wait for, for you to process a digital book, let me know. And so, and then we transfer the files over and we get all that done. So instead of waiting, like once the digital files are done with Audible, NLS has them within 6 months. And then, so that's how I do it. And I just learned that on my own. No one told me that, I.
Because the usual route is getting as many as your visually impaired friends that want to read your book to request.
Make the request, right?
Yeah,
Yes.
and then they have to find a narrator, and then it has to be recorded, and then it has to go through review because it can't go up on the national system until it's the same quality that they are used to getting from commercial productions.
Yes.
Or from that kind of or in-house, they know how to train their narrators to get it to the level where it will be accepted by the whole library system, but it gets a different designation to indicate that it was recorded locally kind of
Right.
thing. And so it's all really very complicated, and I know that one because I'm getting one of mine recorded, and it's a fairly short book. It's a children's book, so it's not like
Yeah.
it's gonna take hours to record, but
Right.
it's
Mine
still,
don't either. I mean, even my Words of Life was only a 3 hour recording or 3 hour and 40 minute recording. So it's not like they're long. I wish the process would be a little more, it's more streamlined than it used to be. Yeah,
It
for
used to be
sure.
almost impossible.
Yes. So there's hope, people listening,
Yeah, it
definitely.
is.
And
You
we're
know,
out
it's
there to
but
help you.
we're not, as
Yeah.
authors, we're not really in charge. Sometimes our books go up without us even being informed that anyone was
Yeah.
considering recording it. And that's always a shock. You go look under your name and you go, oh, they put
Yeah,
that book up. So it is a kind of an adventure,
definitely is an
getting it out
adventure.
there for our friends to be able to access it. Okay, so what are some of the I was curious about some of the ways you market, because when you're an indie publisher, you don't have somebody setting up speaking engagements, book signings, all that stuff for you.
Yeah.
How do you approach marketing? Because I know you've used some novel ways and you've done a really good job of it.
Oh, well, marketing is the bane of my existence. It's something you need to be successful, but it's also one of the hardest things to do. I think very gifted and determined people are good marketers, and the rest of us try to pretend we are. So I try to start really at a local level. So, of course I start with, all this, all my networking, people that I know. I try to market through through all of my avenues of connections. That's part of my tagline is making meaningful connections, and I try to keep those connections open whether I'm ready to promote a book or not, so that when I am ready to slot that book in for promotion, people are like, "Oh yeah, we know Anne. Oh, she's got a book. Oh, okay." It's not like I'm, I always want to be just at the periphery of everybody's attention. So, it really does matter when you keep fresh in people's minds. So the blog helps that. I have a newsletter that helps, a little monthly thing that I put out for people, an author's newsletter, and then I have, I really try to work those networking things. I do have a really a good who I would consider a good friend, Sam Jasmine in KFAI Minnesota Public Radio. She helps me promote. I would like to get more radio and people to help out, but it's hard. You've got to really to push yourself on people.
And
I
I
mean, it
know for
sounds terrible, but
no, but
you got to
it
really
takes
be
a lot of
confident. And
courage and
yeah, it
confidence to do
does.
that.
This is why my book, not her book. You want my book, and this is why you want my book. And I'll tell you why you want my book, because my book is the best book because, and you really have to have that mindset, or you're not gonna be able to walk into that library and say, "Hey, these are my books, and they deserve to be on your shelves, and this is why." You've got to
I've been tempted to go donate them to my local libraries.
It's better if they buy them from the
I
library catalog. But so things like that, it's hard, and it's challenging. But I mean, there are certain things you can do to keep yourself prepared. I mean, there's a you have a press kit, things like you've got to have a good headshot. People are going to want a picture of you. They're going to want the synopsis of the book. They're going to want every place that they can get the book. I also have a sheet that I keep. It's called my ISBN sheet, and every book with every so I have let's say Upwelling, and it's available on Amazon and blah blah blah, but it also is available through the NLS Bard system, and I have the NLS Bard number. And one of my books, Hope for the Tarnished, also has a library catalog number, an LCCN, and I have that on there. You have to keep track and be organized and be ready to just do your elevator pitch and make yourself available.
I think that's
It's
one of
just
the
it's a lot.
hardest things, isn't it, for people who live in their heads a lot, like most writers do.
I mean, I'm going out to promote one of my poems that's in an anthology at the end of the month, in mid-April, the one that Deborah had said she liked. And I'm going to go out there. I'm going to read my poem. I was invited to do it, so I'm going to do it. And I'm going to meet other people. I'm going to make these connections, and I'm going to bring a couple of copies of my books, some of my postcards, and lay them out on the table and see what happens. So
What about bookmarks and things like that?
I bookmarks are really expensive to do for some reason.
Because
So
of
I do,
the way they're cut, I
I
guess.
think so. I do postcards. I do, 4x6 postcards with the they if you get them on sale, you can get like 150, 200 postcards for $20, something like that. And so there's a picture of the book on the front, and on the back is all of the contact information. You could even have a QR code put on there if you want. So it would have my name, the title of the book, a little thumbnail picture of some of my other books, and then my website and that kind of stuff. So,
Yeah,
and
all that could be read with a QR code reader
yeah,
then.
I leave those at hotels. I leave them in doctor's offices. I give them to bus drivers. Yeah.
Yeah, you are a lot braver soul than I But no, but I admire you for it because it isn't easy being an indie author.
No, it's not. No.
Okay, so where do you draw your inspiration from and decide what you're going to do with it? Is it going to be a poem, an essay, or a short story?
I usually just from mostly from nature, maybe from some quirky things that might happen to me. I wrote a poem about the really crappy pillows in a hotel, and I was, and then it morphed into something else. But anyway, so those kinds of things, every avenue, I think being open to all of that is really important to have the inspiration. And short stories and stuff that, a lot of times it's a dream, or it's a what if question, or maybe it's reading someone's story and saying, well, I have something that maybe I'll try writing something similar or whatever. So all over the place. Life is the inspiration to writing.
Yeah, that makes sense. Are you working on a new book?
I actually have a couple of things I've been kind of thinking about. I have a I've always wanted to write a book about the therapeutic benefits of service animals and people, and so that's kind of in the works. I might get that going again. I have a
That could be interesting with your contacts from being in the
in
Veterans
the okay.
Administration.
Yeah. And I also have a third book, that would be like the third book in the Hope for the Tarnished, Imperfections, and then I have a third book that would kind of bring all those three together in like a series.
A young adult series.
This one is yeah, this one will actually be an older person, like somebody who's around 30. So I've kind of gone from the young to the 18-year-old, and then somebody who's an older professional person. I'm working on that, and I want to work on another poetry collection. So
Okay, so you kind of keep several things going at the same time as you get inspired to work on it, jumping back and forth.
Because I don't believe in writer's block.
Yeah,
I
you consider yourself more of a seat of the pants type writer than somebody that comes in with a full-blown outline in their head.
Well, it's interesting. I have decided to try outlining, and I'm actually working on an outline for a science fiction fantasy novel, with an outline, and it's working out really well. I think the outline process can help people to just be able to be more confident with writing something as complex as like a book, because it helps you keep yourself from writing yourself into corners, and you stay ahead of the story in a way where you can feel more confident about writing that story. So I'm finding that at least for books, for novel length works, outlining is terrific. So,
Ah, so you kind of changed from your beginnings.
yeah, I have. Yeah, it's interesting. Because there were a couple of times where I wrote myself into corners with some of my stories. And I'm like, I've got to figure out a new way to do this. So, and I did. I've been doing studying because writing is a craft. You don't just,
Instantly.
yeah, you got to work at it, So, and I just want to be better and better and better at it as I go along this life.
How
So.
did you choose the title for this book, Imperfections? Usually, a title has something to do with an element in the story, and I was looking at it trying to figure out whose imperfections when I was reading it.
Yeah, I don't know. That title was always with that book. I had written the original manuscript years ago, and that's the title I gave it, and it just kind of stuck. I never even considered making it a different title. I think of the imperfections of people. People aren't perfect. We're going to hurt each other. We're going to make each other happy. We're going to give each other joy, pain, and and that's what that book is about. It's about pain and joy and not giving up, hope. We treat each other well and we treat each other crappy. I mean, that's a, it's a human condition. We're not perfect.
Okay, yeah, there. All right. Well, I think it's probably time for us to open it up for questions from the
Right.
audience.
I
Or
think
did you
Gunnar
have
had
them?
his hand up first.
Okay.
Yeah. I think I heard his hand go up while we were talking, and I'm like, oh, Peter got his hand up. Oh, funny.
right, Peter, you want to unmute and ask your question?
Hey, Deanna. Your name is Deanna. Hey, Annie. Thanks
Hey.
for writing this book. And I wanted to sort of focus more on this new book of yours. And what strikes me about it compared to your other stuff that I've read is it's more gritty. There's a lot of stuff that's sometimes very unpleasant to read, about domestic violence, about rape and all kinds of stuff. And talk about how that was to write and what prompted you to take that turn.
Sure. Well, with Hope for the Tarnished, my first novel, I had kind of developed, this, I guess this artistic pivot with trauma and how to counteract that trauma with hope. And so I felt successful doing that in Hope for the Tarnished, and I figured, well, I'll see if I can use it again for this book. And so, but I did have to do some searching, within myself to say, well, what type of trauma do I want this character to undergo, and how far am I going to go as the writer? To employ these aspects of what Lainey's going to go through and how it's going to play out in terms of her in terms of her character role and the arc of the story. So I find that that's why I put those particular things in the story. I felt that they grounded the story in a way that gained people empathy and sympathy for her and helped people connect with her so that it would ground her character, make her seem that she could have some gravity. And also, and then when you do you go with her through her experiences. You feel her joy, and you feel her all the good stuff too, because you felt the bad stuff with her first. So
Can you still hear me, Annie?
yes.
So the other thing that sort of struck me, knowing a bit about your life, is there's a lot of sort of pieces of your life incorporated in the book. There's a whole thing about dog training, not service dogs necessarily.
Right.
You did worked with, as I understand it, veterans who went through a rough time in the VA and try to deal with family stuff that they're dealing with. How did you sort of leverage that, if those experiences, into writing the book,
Well, first of all,
or others?
well, I mean, the book itself, the location and everything of the book, as I lived in that area for about 8 years of my life, and I really loved it there. So I figured, well, might as well make the book in that, be in that place, because I love the San Francisco Bay Area. I did actually leave my heart there. Not to be contrite, but so in the trauma piece, like, I don't know, your experience when you write a novel, it's part of you does go into it, whether it's
Sure.
obvious to other people or not. I mean, that's you you're you are the book, you are the story. I mean, in a lot of ways. I don't know what else to say about that, except that, yeah,
One
sure,
more.
there's a lot of things in there that are just pieces of my experiences, like the when they're there's a part where they are delivering puppies, and I actually delivered 2 litters of kittens. So I know what it's like to deliver babies, animal babies, and I took my experiences, had being able to help deliver kittens, to delivering puppies, and it worked.
One more question, if
And
you don't mind, Annie. I don't want to take up too much time, but how do you think disability plays in the role disability plays in this book?
Network app, and
I didn't the only person I really wanted to show strength and disability, but I didn't want the book to really focus on that. So the person who I showed as a mentor and a role model, Ray, he was a veteran, and he had lost part of his leg from an IED, but he never dwelt on it. I mean, there was a part where tells his story a little bit, but then he overcame, and he just he became a role model, and one of Lainey's best supporters. So that was kind of the extent of that.
Because I would think that Lainey, the lead character, correct? Do I have the name right?
Yes.
You could argue that PTSD and all the stuff that she experienced might qualify her as a disability, or maybe not.
Yeah, you could. I mean, I think that's what the magic of her character is, that you can identify with her at a lot of different levels.
Yeah, and after the first assault, when she was going to night school and was knocked unconscious, she was suffering from the after effects of a blow to the head, which
Yes.
were
Yes.
It made
debilitating
her,
her
yes,
Yeah.
made her think, make poor decisions, and feel dizzy and all those things.
Yeah,
Excuse me?
disconnected at a time
Yes.
when she was very
Marlene?
vulnerable.
Excuse me, we have another hand. Deborah
Okay.
Thompson.
I'm done. Thank you so much.
Oh,
I
thanks,
appreciate it.
Peter. Hey, Deborah.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Annie, I just wanted to say I really enjoyed the book. It was a wonderful story, and it captured me from the beginning to the last page of them getting married and all of that. It was really great. And I was very, very impressed with your character development. And that's something that I really want to work on for a couple of books that I am trying to do. I've not written a fictional story like this, but I would love to be able to do something similar to what you have done. But I really enjoyed it. The characters that you have developed, so you, this is like the second book in the a series of, you're going to have a third book that's going to come out?
Yes.
Based off this?
Yeah. So the first book is Hope for the Tarnished, and that was about a young girl. And it ends when she's in her early 20s. And this book is another character that she's a little older. She's 18 when the book starts.
When it starts, right.
And she ends, you know, the book ends when she's in her 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third book will be a person who's probably in her late 20s. And then it probably, you know, have the same kind of story arc with time and everything. But I don't know yet because I haven't finished it.
Well, I guess and I'm going to get off so someone else can talk. But I just wanted to say that I saw that you had a number of characters there that you really could take from the story in Imperfections and actually create, you know, a new storyline, but from the characters within the book itself, because even Joanne, the best friend who worked with her at the kennel, you know, she has a boyfriend, and mm-hmm. of course Ray is dating the doctor who treated her.
Yes.
So they have something that can go on, and of course we find out the father and his wife, or, you know, I don't want to tell the whole story. They need to read the book, but it was really good. So
I'm
see so that you could really
you
take them.
It.
You could really take those characters and move them in some different directions and create several, stories or books or novels just from those characters. But I enjoyed it. So you see, I did read.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
Next, we have Miss Ruth.
Hey, Miss Ruth.
Hi, Annie. Congratulations. So I ordered the book today on Amazon. Don't give me too much information with spoilers here, please, people. I want to thank you for sharing your journey as a writer. And, you know, you've shared with various groups your knowledge of the industry. And, you know, some writers, they sort of guard what they know. They don't want the competition. But you shared freely. Now, you have a question. In any of the books you've written, does a character arc ever shock you as you're writing it? Or do you know everything characters capable of, and how they come to life follows a path you expect?
Good question. You know, characters surprise me. I didn't expect Lainey and Efren to, you know, I didn't expect the ending to be the way it was. That kind of surprised me. I didn't expect Shane to get arrested and go to jail. That kind of stuff. So those things just happen. You know, I didn't expect her and her dad to, you know, to reconcile the way they did. So there were a lot of things I didn't expect. I didn't expect Ray and Bette to hook up. That came as a surprise to me. I was like, wow. Yeah. So there were a lot of little pieces that I didn't expect to happen that happened. So, it was a really, really fun to discover.
Congratulations. Much success.
Thank you.
The next hand is a phone number.
You had a question?
This is Roger Peterson.
Hi, Roger.
And I've been a longtime member of Friends in Art of ACB, and but I had been sort of wayward recently and got back into it. And I just saw this in my email, and I thought I'd like to come and give my best wishes to Anne and Deanna will vouch for me, I think, that I'm a real person. We've known each other for about 30 years, I think.
Yeah, anyway, the last time I remember seeing you, Roger, was when you were lost, when they pulled up a carpet strip across an open
area. Oh, you're
going to
bring that up?
Yes. and I came out of a hallway, and you were standing there going, where do we go now? The carpet's gone.
That's right. They took up all the carpet strips in the hotel before the convention was over.
Oh, boy.
And that was lost.
But
that was in Denver, I think.
Yeah, fortunately, my dog was really patterned, so he knew which hallway we needed to reach across this open space.
Yeah.
So I rescued Roger.
But
well,
I've also
thank you for coming, Roger. Yeah.
Well, I want to meet you and get to know you, and I'm not sure I'm getting old, and I'm not coming in person to conventions much anymore. But I'll certainly try to. To be present with you at some point. I'm a big
fear
of the joining of hands and so forth. I was just thinking about my hands have been in the hands of Ray Bradbury and Amy Tan and a few other people. I want your hand to be there too.
Well, anyway,
I don't want to take up a lot of time, but just know that I'm here and I'm a big fan, and I helped to start Friends in Art way back, and I thank you.
Well, thanks, Roger. Aw, how sweet. Okay.
There are no hands.
There are no hands. All right, so.
All right, Miss Alice, hit it.
Got it.
Thank you, Deanna, and thank you, Annie, and good evening to all of you. I am here on behalf of Marilyn Brandt Smith, the president of Behind Our Eyes. For some of you who may not know my voice, I am Alice Massa. I am a former president of Behind Our Eyes and the current program manager. And I just want to very briefly share with you some information about our organization, Behind Our Eyes. Behind Our Eyes is an organization of writers with disabilities. And our nonprofit organization was established in 2006 with 27 charter members. And Deanna, our interviewer this evening, was one of those charter members. And she is the person also who, if you go to our website, you will find the history that she wrote of Behind Our Eyes. And when those 27 charter members met in 2006, they really went in three important directions. First of all, they were planning to meet on Sunday evenings, and we today still meet the first and third Sundays of each month at free conference call, and we have a variety of meetings, that a variety of programs at those Sunday evening meetings with guest speakers, some of our own members speaking, panels, and a real wide variety of programs that we offer besides critique sessions on those Sunday evenings. And that initial group also established the Writers' Party Line, the email list of our organization that is still very active and is the backbone of our organization still today. And most importantly, perhaps, they worked on the first of our three anthologies. And by December of 2007, that first anthology was published, Behind Our Eyes, and it is available on NLS, Bard, and of course on Amazon as well. Well, that brings us up then to 2008 when the organization was incorporated. In 2010, a new branch was added to Behind Our Eyes, and that was Magnets and Ladders, our biannual online literary publication. And between 2010 and 2013, our current president, Marilyn Brandt Smith, was the editor of our Magnets and Ladders. And then in 2014, Mary Jo Lord took over the editorship of our online publications. and Magnets and Ladders. And so she's celebrating 10 years of being editor of Magnets and Ladders with the spring publication that will soon be out. And that's free to anyone in a variety of ways. The 2013, if we go back just 1 year, the second anthology of our organization was published, Behind Our Eyes, A Second Look. Again, it's available on NLS Bard and also on Amazon. And that was under the editorship of Kate Chamberlain, who is still an active member in our organization. If we go on to 2016, Leonard Touchner, who's one of our guests here this evening as well, initiated some small group critique sessions. Those are still active. He began with two groups of five individuals in each group, and that expanded to a third group about a year later. And then in 2019, we went on to a new branch of Behind Our Eyes, and that was the Reader's Workshop, an important part of our organization that gives each month an opportunity for our members, and we have 125 members, grown quite a bit since those initial 27, but the Reader's Workshop each month gives the opportunity to our members to share in reading their prose and poetry aloud for fellow members and have that opportunity to offer that in a very welcoming atmosphere. And Carol Farnsworth, who is here tonight, is the team leader currently of our Reader's Workshop. That takes us up to 2022. And in January of that year, Carol was our first Beau book launch author. And in 2022, we had 10 authors who were featured in our monthly Beau book launches. In 2023, we again featured 10 authors with our book launches. And Annie is number three for the year 2024. So this has been a very successful new branch of Behind Our Eyes. In 2023, in January, we also began another new branch of Behind Our Eyes, and that was our Writers Exchange classes or courses. And in 2023, we offered five of those. Those are courses taught by our own members for our own members free of charge. We had a wide variety of those, and we continue with those for this second year here in 2024. So as you can see, we've grown a lot and we offer our members quite a bit, but we never have since 2006, we've never asked for dues for membership. Anyone who is a person with a verifiable disability and who has a keen interest in writing, whether it's writing as an avocation or a vocation, is welcome to join our organization. While we do not ever collect dues as any nonprofit organization, we always welcome any donation by anyone who is able to give a donation to our organization or to Magnets and Ladders. And of course, you can read much more about Behind Our Eyes at our website, behindoureyes.org. And besides the wealth of information that you will find there, you will also find a link that says join us. And if you are interested, or if you know anyone else who might be interested in joining Behind Our Eyes, please have that individual go to the Join Us link. It's just a very short application process. And if you can't do that application online or your friend can't, there's an option there as well. And Marlene Massat, who welcomed all of you at the onset of our book launch this evening is our secretary, and she is the one who brings in all of our new members. And a project begun back around 2019, a committee called Bow Behind Our Eyes Pilots, our members who welcome in to our organization our new members, so that new members can more quickly become a part of our organization and garner the benefits of all that we in Behind Our Eyes offer to our 125 members and growing. And a final point here, another way that we have of offering our writers is National Poetry Month, which just a few days away here, we will initiate our celebration of National Poetry Month. I am very pleased to say we've had 32 people who have volunteered to be poets of the day for each of the 30 days of April, including two alternates for poets of the day. So we have a very exciting month of April coming up. And in the midst of that month, on April 18, Linda McKinney Lambert will have our next Bow book launch. So I certainly welcome all of you to join us again on April 18 at 8 o'clock for Linda McKinney Lambert, who will be interviewed by Lisa Bush. And I'm very much looking forward to that. Annie, congratulations on book number 6. We're very pleased and happy for you. Thank you, Marlene, for your work tonight. And thank you, Deanna, also for your interviewing. Thanks for all of you for coming tonight. And back to you, Deanna.
Well, everyone, have a great evening. And Annie, tell us where we can get your book.
You can get my book on Amazon. And if you want to go to my website, you can go to www.annchappetta.com. That's spelled Annchippetta. You can find links to all my books on my website.
All righty. Have a great rest of your evening, everyone.
Thank you, everybody, for coming.